Petzl.com. Get yourself a torch, Don.
It is Petzl 30, Scott, which means it's dark, the sun isn't up, but we are, and it's time to run.
That's the best time to run.
Candace Burt's with us today to talk to us a little bit about running at night.
What are some tips that you have for running at night, Candace?
Well, when I run at night, I usually try to wait a little bit before I turn on my headlamp, especially if you're coming from it getting light or being light to dark. So your eyes will adjust a little bit to the dark and then turn it on before you start tripping over stuff.
Yeah, that would be the critical point. Where is that line?
Where's the fine line?
It's pretty important.
Sometimes it will tell you yourself after that first fall. It's time to turn it on.
It was time. Hey, Candace, I've often wondered that about, you know, where to shine that light, directly in front of you, out far. I mean, where is the best, most advantage beam focus for me as a runner?
Well, you know, I just started using the Petzl now, and you really don't have to focus. You don't have to point the light any certain place. What it does is it adjusts the lighting. So if you're looking at the ground close to you, it makes it a little less bright. You're not going to reflect off of sand or wet surfaces, and you can just really see what you're stepping on. And then when you look out, further down the trail to get a sense for the speed you're going to need to maintain, it just gets super bright. You don't even need... I used to run with two headlamps. I'd have one around my waist and one on my head. But the now is... that reactive lighting is so powerful and so good that I only need that one headlamp.
So it's actually cheaper for you.
It is.
You get two headlamps for the price of one.
It is an amazing headlamp. You're right. It's that technology just is a game changer.
We had a Nation member just this week tweet us that said that she finally, after our incessant promoting of the Petzl torches, the Now and the Tika RXP, she went out and bought one. She bought a Tika RXP, and she said, wow.
I think the term she used, we finally wore her down.
Oh, that's exactly what we said, yeah.
Well, one thing that will not wear down is that battery, because you can recharge it. How's that for a spin, Scott? So go to Petzl.com and get out of the dark. Scott, kind of like an out and back? And Gingy's out and back at TRN.
They are back, and we were able to twist their arms. Our last promo...
Or their toes.
Oh, boy. That was bad. last time, it was a promotion where you could get 20% off, but it was only a one-time deal. Trail runners don't just wear one pair of socks.
That's right.
So now you can go back on to Njinji.com, and you can get 20% off your entire order. When you check out, use the code TR Nation. Now, if you're out on a run and you can't remember this, and you don't have a Sharpie and you don't want to write it on your hand, it's going to be in the show notes or the podcast notes. Just go back, go to Njinji.com and enter the code TRN Nation. 20% off. You can go back as many times as you want. The only downside, Don.
What's that, Scott?
It's only for U.S. only.
Okay.
So we apologize for that. We tried to twist their arm, but it was already too twisted. We didn't want to break it off.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very
casual.
That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Candace Burt.
And I'm Scott Warr. And today we are pleased to have a special guest, Greg McMillan. He actually was on a podcast, about a year and a half ago. Back in June of 2013, we did a podcast called Give It a Rest. And we talked about the importance of rest in your training. And in fact, I looked back at that old podcast, and there was a quote that Don loved, and so we put it in the show notes.
What was that quote, Scott?
It was by Gary Avery, and he said, "Optimal stress plus optimal rest equals optimal progress." And I remember thinking about that for a long time and kind of noodling that, and boy, it just really makes sense. But we're not going to talk about that. If you're interested in that, go back to that podcast. We'll link that podcast to the podcast notes on this one. It was really good. But today, we're going to talk to Greg McMillan, who is the founder of McMillan Running, which is a nice website resource for runners. It has a lot of coaching. The McMillan calculator, the infamous McMillan calculator. He has other coaches that help him there, including our favorites, Ian Torrance and Emily Harrison. They are coaches for McMillan Running down in Flagstaff, Arizona. Greg also has a master's degree in exercise science. One thing that I was looking when I was looking at your bio, Greg, that just I guess I must have not looked at it the first time when I looked at your bio, but you've coached over 2,000 runners to qualify for Boston, the Boston Marathon. That's a huge, huge thing, I think.
Well, it's kind of our Olympics, isn't it? So it's certainly a pleasure when you get to help somebody make it to the People's Olympics, the Boston Marathon, and been fortunate to work with a lot of people that were able to meet that goal.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about one of the books that you wrote called The Marathon Freakout. And although, you know, a lot of our listeners, well, I think a lot of our listeners have either attempted a marathon or have run marathons in the past. We're talking about different distances, typically ultra distances. But I think that the premise still remains when it comes down to 2 weeks before the event and the day of the event. I think many of us get feeling that stress and feeling a little freaked out. So we decided to reach out to you. There's some really good tips in here, and we're glad you could be with us. Thank you.
Well, I'm always happy to be here.
I was really interested in peaking versus tapering, because I've always tapered for a race, and like you say in the book, mixed results with the tapering. Sometimes it seems to work perfectly, and then other times I start out the race and I just feel horrible. I mean, I do 100 milers, so I might take to get to mile 40 before you know I get in my groove. So how do those two differ, peaking and tapering?
Well, somewhat it's semantics, because we're just definitely talking about getting ready for race day, and most of the traditional talk has been tapering. And the reason I changed it was that I felt like a lot of runners, part of the reason that they didn't feel good on race day was that they tapered too much. And so I wanted a different term so that maybe it would change their mindset going into those critical last couple of weeks. And that's why I wanted to say peaking instead of tapering, because people seem to, you know, if you say taper to a runner, then they might really taper too much versus peak. I felt like that communicated, hey, everything we're doing every day between now and the race is to help you get ready for a peak performance. And so that would spill over from the training they needed to do into flexibility, mobility, nutrition, mental prep. All of those things started to sort of ramp up, kind of peak, as opposed to taper. So somewhat it was a little bit my own semantics as a coach of trying to just shift an emphasis for the runner, but I liked it better. I just felt like it put the athletes in the right mental zone.
You know, you start out in chapter one talking about that philosophy, and one of the first rules that you have is not to change your weekly running routine. And I think that I know that in my running, I remember the first few that I did the taper, where, you know, I was running 4 days a week, and I would cut that back to, you know, 3 days a week and really reduce the mileage I was running. But you say you want to keep the routine going, correct?
Yeah, what I've found is that if you can maintain your frequency of running, that seems to help you not feel flat. Because the body likes rhythm. It likes routine. That's why if you take a few days off and you start running again, you wonder, who stole my body? I used to be a runner, and now after 3 days, I feel terrible. So we obviously don't want that experience when we go into our peak race. So I really like people to try to stick with the frequency that they normally run. So if you're running 4 days a week, I like to stay running 4 days a week. The only exception is maybe if you're battling a little niggly injury or something like that, and that extra day of recovery might be what you need to sort of clear that up. But if you feel fine, I just don't like changing the running rhythm. I feel like that just takes our – it's something happens, and we often don't feel as good when we come back. And you certainly don't want that on race day.
But do you advocate backing off on the time that you spend on those runs or the mileage that you spend on those runs?
Yes. So you do reduce the volume of your running within that same frequency. So if you were going out for 50 minutes on one run during the peaking phase, that might go to 40 minutes and then 30 minutes. So you would reduce that volume, but you would maintain your intensity too. We know from the research on peaking that it's good if you can maintain or even elevate your intensity slightly as you get close to the race. So it's that balance. And I think to what Candace mentioned, it's a challenge for a lot of runners to get that balance correct. And that adds stress to, you know, right when you're getting ready for the race, just when you don't want stress. And we're also very hypersensitive in the last 2 weeks. I think we want to feel so good that if we do feel maybe not as great on a run, then our mind starts this crazy downward spiral of, why am I even going to do the race? Maybe I didn't do enough training, and that whole host of psychological problems that we lead ourselves into. So the goal, you know, kind of the book is like, let's just stay calm out there and we'll get to the race okay.
I think that's one of the things that I like about this is the times where I have backed off on the frequency of those runs or breaking the routine, if you will, that's when I start getting antsy. And then I start thinking about things more. And the more you think about the race, then I, at least for me, I get more stressed out. There's more idle time. There's an extra 50 minutes in that day that you're worried about, man, should I be out running? Am I jeopardizing my race because I'm not out running today? So
yeah,
I like that.
Very common. Very common. I mean, that's why it's called surviving the marathon freakout, because it's essentially what we do. And I've done it, and of course, coaching for so long with so many marathoners, you just see it time and time again. And that was really what spurred me to say, I need to put what I talk to them about in person down on paper, so maybe more people can kind of see the process and maybe have some ideas to help sort of avoid some of the common things that they do.
With the breadth and the volume of runners that you have coached, do you find that everybody freaks out, or half the people freak out, or?
Pretty much everybody. It's a very common phenomenon. And I've worked with Olympians that freak out. I work with people who are brand new to the race that freak out. It's across the board. I think it's just a psychological part of being a human, that if you invest so much to get ready for this event, it means so much to you that when it gets close, you get nervous. And that leads to a lot of different things that you may, as a rational human being, not do, but suddenly you find yourself doing it. So I think it is very, very common, but you can get over it. You can develop a strategy that you find works and something that's repeatable. And once, you know, like everything, if you have a routine the last couple of weeks before a big race, if you have a routine the day before a race, the day of a race, that just helps calm your mind so that you don't have to think, what should I be doing? You know, well, it's Tuesday, I'm racing on Sunday, this is what I do. And that, like to your point, that makes you calm down a little bit. It keeps you from getting off track and maybe starting to have thoughts that aren't productive.
Candace, do you still get freaked out before a race?
Well, you know, with 100-mile racing, it's the race sort of starts, you know, 75 miles down the road. But I do, when I feel like my training hasn't been going very well, or I put competitive pressure on myself. But usually my way of dealing with that nervousness is just telling myself, I'm going to run the best that I can, the best time that I can. I'm going to work the hardest that I can and can't control anybody else. So I'm wondering, Greg, do you have certain techniques you use before a marathon or an event to psychologically prepare yourself or calm yourself for that?
For myself personally, it's very similar to what you just said. And that is that I just rely on, can I do the best that I can do on that day? Because you don't know, right? Every day is a different day. And so I'm really focused on, can I do the best I can do? And if you do that, then I think it takes that external part away, and you're able to focus on yourself, and you're able to focus on, this is my race strategy. I'm going to execute it, and I need to feel and think this way in the first part of the race, the middle part of the race, and the last part of the race. There's comfort in that, and you have to have a strong mantra. I think it's good for runners to have something they can come back to, so that when times do get tough, and they will, that you have something to hold on to and kind of get you back on track so that you don't go down mental paths that aren't productive for you.
You know, Candace, when you were talking about that, I thought back. I mean, you're a big yoga advocate and practitioner. Does that do you think that helps you, that gives you that mental edge with what you do with yoga?
It does, especially the breathing techniques, because a lot of times I find that when I get nervous, my breathing gets shallow. And so I just try to take in a nice deep breath and let it out. Sometimes even in yoga, we'll have certain types of breath where we'll let it out really loud. You just like, ah, and that can somehow, it feels like it lets out the tension. So I'll even do that in a race. If I just get a little jittery at the start of the race, just make a sound with the exhale. And then yoga is relaxing anyway. I know, I must be interesting to run next to.
All of a sudden people turn around. What's going on back there, Candace? You know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was the whole idea. Well, let's actually before we get into that, let's talk about that 2 weeks before. You know, you've already said that we need to keep the routine. Don't change the routine. If you're running 3 days a week, continue to run 3 days a week. If you're running 4 days, run 4 days. Maybe back off on the intensity and the mileage a little bit. What about other types of cross training? Do you advocate, you know, if you're normally running an hour and a half run on the weekdays, and you're cutting that back to an hour, do you advocate going and doing something differently, getting on a bike or a swim or go to the gym or something, or just relax?
No, you just need to relax. Part of it is that you're reducing that volume so that your body can sort of pool all its resources, restock all the fuel, mentally and physically get ready for the race. So you're not trying to maintain the same level of exercise. And you certainly would never want to add something new in right before the race. So if you are cross training, then keep cross training. Again, maybe follow what you're doing in running, where you're reducing the volume of it, again, so your body has a little bit more rest. But you definitely wouldn't say, well, normally I do 90 minutes, now I'm only doing 60, I'm missing 30 minutes of training. That's not the right mindset when you're getting ready in this particular part of peaking for a race. You just want to, you're thinking about recovery. You're thinking about resting up, storing that energy, getting ready for the race.
Yeah, and I also, I liked how you included in the peaking, you included speed workouts as well, assuming that the person was still doing them, or was doing them in training in the first place. How do you feel like that benefits a runner in the week or two before the big event?
Yeah, that seems to be one of the consistent things in all of the research about peaking, or tapering as they call it in the scientific research, is that if you include some higher intensity work, speed work, as we would call it, if you have a little bit of that in the peaking phase, that helps bring the body to a higher performance level. And that seems to be the one sort of consistent thing in the tapering research. Runners find that as well. So if you are doing some intensity, keep that in there for sure. You wouldn't want to suddenly not do any intensity. And it has been shown that it can give you a little bit of a boost in performance. Again, though, if you're not doing any, and then all of a sudden you went to the track 4 days before the race and said, well, I'm going to do some 400s because supposedly helped me, that would be a mistake possibly. You wouldn't want to risk that. So again, I think the peaking is about just modifying what you're used to and what you're doing, and maybe just modulating your training so that you can get that feeling of, man, I'm well rested, I feel great, I'm starting to get that light and fresh feel in my legs, My mind is good. I'm relaxed. I'm calm. I have a great race strategy. I know my nutrition strategy. You know, you kind of dial, you're checking off all of those little boxes so that when you get to the race site, you're a calm person instead of a crazy person.
You know, I think as a whole, runners are pretty positive people. They have to be. But I find in myself when I get 2 weeks out from a race, or maybe even 3 weeks for me, and I go out and I have a bad run or a bad workout, all of a sudden these negative thoughts start creeping in. And I think, you know, maybe I'm not ready for this. Maybe I shouldn't show up at race day. Maybe I need to, you know, postpone this. Maybe I'm not, you know, I really don't know whether I can finish. How do you coach your athletes to omit the negative chatter?
Well, and that's very common. It's very common in the peaking phase that you may not feel great. And some of that is that, you know, you're hypersensitive to how your body feels and you want it to feel amazing in every run and every workout right before the race. So you're kind of setting yourself up maybe to not feel great. But even if you don't feel great, if you do feel a little sluggish, that's perfectly normal. That happens frequently in the last couple of weeks. And it's probably a combination of psychological and physiological things. But it's normal. It's okay to feel that way. Race day is what we care about. And the, you know, part of, and you read it in the book, part of it is stop that negative mental path. Mm-hmm. You're going down a road that you don't want to go down. That as an intelligent person, you would not say this is a thought pattern you'd want to have before your big race. So you have to sort of exit that freeway and loop around and go back to a place that is positive. And I really encourage athletes to go back through their log, really pull out all of the good weeks, good workouts, good races, whatever was great, made you feel good, and just look back at those and relive those moments. Our mind is so funny in that you think that's what we would hold on to. You think we'd only dwell on the good stuff, but we don't. We're so quick to dwell on the bad stuff. I worked with a really fast guy one time, and I had him in such great shape. And we did, I don't know, 100 workouts, right, getting ready for this marathon. But he had one bad tempo run. And it was maybe 3 weeks before the marathon. And I was telling him, you're ready. Look at all these workouts. He kept coming back. Well, what about that tempo run? What about that tempo run? I finally said, after the race, I said, you know, I don't think we should work together anymore. if you are only going to dwell on one bad workout out of 100, you need somebody beyond my capabilities to help you through that, because that's like bad psychology. That's not going to help you in the race. You got to dwell on those really good days.
You know, I remember early on having some good mentors, and I would assume that if, you know, this is a good reason to have good training partners and coaching, is to kind of slap you in the face and say, you know what, you need to trust your training. You know, you may have a bad day today, but tomorrow may be a different day. But look back at all of the hard work you've put in. You've earned this, and yeah, you're ready. Forget about today. You've earned it. You've put in the deposits into the bank.
Yeah, a buddy of mine, he talks about it. A real good race performance is about your body of work. It is about that full entire training plan, right? It's not one workout or one race. It is the body of work. And so if you have a good body of work going into that last bit before a race, then you need to know that. You need to feel confident in that. And like you say, trust your training, trust your preparation, trust your coach, trust your training partners, trust your plan, so that you're simply going to execute that plan. And that's a really good mindset.
You know, speaking of that, I know my best race was preceded by one of my worst workouts. and it's true. I turned back on that long run and said, man, I just lost the mojo and I don't know what I'm going to do about this upcoming long race. And as it turns out, I'm glad I turned and I had just a great, great race when the bib was on. So it is the body of work. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I'm curious about your coaching that you do. I actually just signed on with Jacob Puzzi, who I believe you guys just hired to work for you with the coaching. So it's exciting to be able to talk to you in person. But how do you think How do you think coaching can help a runner who's already got quite a bit of experience running in general?
Well, a lot of times for the more experienced runners, it's not so much about the X's and O's. It's not just about, you know, do this run, do that run, do this workout. It's really a more global view, and it's able to tease out for that runner, where are your issues? Where are the things that right now are keeping you from where you want to be? And that's very different, of course, for different runners. And it's hard to see that in yourself, or sometimes it's hard to at least admit it for yourself. So having a coach can often help you kind of view objectively your entire ecosystem of your running. And that's very, very helpful, because it's not that experienced runners don't know what running they should do, though sometimes I think they need to change the sequencing so that they can get different effects from that sequencing. But to me, it's looking at, you know, from an experienced runner, we need to step back and maybe look at this again. Maybe the forest for the trees idea is getting in the way, and maybe we need to kind of revisit you as a person, because you're a different runner now than you were when you were inexperienced. So it varies a little bit for experienced runners. It's a somewhat a bigger challenge, right? Because you've done a lot of the X's and O's, and we got to tease out exactly what is the next level. And that's a fun process for a coach.
How important do you feel it is to keep a log, a running log, or a journal?
It's very helpful to be able to be objective. And to have a clear record, because our memory fools us, doesn't it? It's that whole the glory days kind of thing, and you remember back, but you don't always remember exactly how it was. And to Don's point, you could be looking back and forgetting that you had a bad run right before this great race, and you need to remember that going forward. So I think having a log can be very helpful in doing that. And some people are better at it than others, and there's so many different opportunities for tracking your running now that not many of us have an excuse.
You know, so let's take this progressively. We've overcome that 2-week period before the race. We're getting down to the week of the race. One of the things that this book has that I think Don has probably photocopied and laminated and put it on his dresser
would be tattooing a step too far.
Tattooing may be something smart. Is the to-do list.
Oh yeah.
The preparation to-do list. And we've talked about many different times, and I've actually had my cheeks hurt from laughing so much from some of the stories that Don has of his preparation or lack of for races. But this is actually very important that it's in that extra time maybe that you're not running, so you're decreasing the mileage or the time that you're running in your routine. Maybe take that time and go through these to-do lists or make your own up so that you're prepared.
Let's go and pick a couple of those out, Scott.
You know, one of the things that you know is reviewing your flight and your hotel information. And this has nothing to do about running, but I had a couple weeks ago a very big business presentation, and I needed to be out of town for that. And
out of the town that the presentation
I was going out of my town to the presentation.
I see.
And so there was a similar stress, and I was driving to the hotel I was going to stay at, and it was late at night. I got there about 12:30 in the morning, and I got to the hotel. Guess what?
Wrong hotel.
No reservation.
Yeah.
No reservation. Hotel's full. I went to 3 other hotels to try to find a room. All of them are booked. I thought, I'm going to be sleeping in my truck tonight. And I think it's just critical that you need to confirm your flight, confirm your hotel reservation, and make sure everything's buttoned up.
Agreed. So let's hit on a couple of those things. You have the list, I'm sure. Mine's laminated and tattooed.
That was one of the things.
Well, let's get one to let Candace and Greg comment.
Actually,
on
let's ask Candace. Candace, do you make a list?
There's
a mental list.
I don't, but I always make sure that if it's a race that I have to travel to, I try to get there like a week or two early, which probably doesn't work for everybody. but even a couple of days early so that you can get back into a rhythm of eating and and all that kind of stuff before the race. Like if it's a big race and it's important to me, I definitely make that time. And then I have everything set up, like drop bags, all that kind of stuff. You probably don't have drop bags in a marathon, but I make sure it's all done so that the day before the race, I can really just relax.
And Greg, you've picked out marathon, freak out marathon, but I've got to think this applies to 5K, 10Ks, 100-mile runs, stage races.
200-mile runs around Lake Tahoe, yeah. Maybe.
Thanks, Candace, for that.
Yeah, I think it's a common phenomenon for everybody. The extent of it varies. And, of course, so many people doing the marathon, it seemed to fit. And one thing I will say is that ultra runners as a whole are more planners, right? You have to plan more. There's a lot more sort of logistics, if you will, that you control during a race. Whereas for a marathon, essentially, you just, as long as you line up and then get to the finish line, but most of the stuff's taken care of for you. So I think ultra runners have a little bit of a leg up when it comes to that. But I really like giving my runners that list. I like them to have a to-do list, again, to occupy their mind, to feel confident. I've checked everything off. I'm good. And also to plan ahead. So that you know, well, if you're going to be traveling to a race site and you're going to need to make a dinner reservation, that's going to be hard to do if you're doing that day of or day before. But it's easy to do a week or 10 days out. So let's go ahead and lock that in. So then when you get there, you're fine. Or find the grocery store or pharmacy or whatever you might need. Know where it is so when you land immediately, you can take care of that. I like that as a coach. When I travel with athletes, it's like, let's get all this stuff done. Let's take care of that now. So you're not that person frantically running into the expo. Oh, I need to buy a pair of gloves. Where are, you know, you don't want to be that person. You want to be the calm person before the race.
I like that line that you put in the book. If some of the runners think you're part of the expo or a booth vendor, you've been there too long.
Yeah. It was funny. I had another book that I launched at Boston 2 years ago. And we had a guy, and I know him for a long time. I coached him online, and he came over fairly early in the morning. And we were kind of chatting, getting caught up on life and kids and all that sort of stuff. And then he started talking to some other people, and I went to lunch, and I came back. He was still there. He was there when we were closing down the booth for the day, and I just kept going, Brian, you have to go home. You need to go lay down and rest. You have a race coming up. So you can get lulled into the expo. I call it the expo adventurer. You're just out there. You're just searching for everything. You're trying everything. It's like a whole new world, and I think it's good to experience that because that is kind of part of race weekend. But you definitely don't want to live there.
It's fun.
I think one of the things that Don has on his list that is probably a little bit specific to Don is.
I was going to find this list. Go ahead, Scott.
He has a list that says, check my Njinji socks to make sure that I have a left and a right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
You know, the one thing that was on here that I think I need to add to my list, and I guess I just never thought of this. You have on your list, make a list of your awesome runs you did during your training.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Remind
Coach.
Yourself how well you can run and how mentally strong you are.
And you talked about doing that more than just the day of or a day before. Coach, can you talk to us about how we can use that to our advantage?
I'm a big fan of that. I think that you should do that through your entire training cycle. When you have a good run, that's got to be something you continue to think about day after day. But certainly as you get within the month and 2 weeks before the race, you want to be reliving. Again, if you have a good logbook, there it is. You can pull it up. You can really feel that run again. And most of us, we have a vivid recollection of that run. You have a vivid recollection of how you felt on the run, maybe where you were running, maybe the conditions, everything leading up to it, maybe who you're running with. It doesn't matter. Relive that. Really let that be part of you, because it's one of those deals like if you just smile, it makes you feel better. So if you just think about that stuff, you will feel better and you will raise your self-confidence, because somewhat, that's what we're battling in the last couple of weeks, is the loss of confidence. It's that doubt that seems to creep in and grow, and you want to be fighting that, and the best way to fight doubt is with confidence. So you need to go back and really believe in yourself and say, well, I did this in training, and that indicates I'm ready, and remember that run? I just felt amazing. I've never felt my legs so fresh, or gosh, that hill. Normally it beats me down, but I killed it that day. That was awesome. Or whatever it is for you, to me, that's an environment, that's a mental environment you want to be in, and you want to live in that as much as possible. And it's likely you're going to have five or six especially good runs in your training plan, and those are the ones I just think live in those a lot the last couple of weeks.
Can we pull away from the trail or track for just a minute, and like we do sometimes, and wax philosophical, as we okay. do here at TRN.
Okay. And start waxing. Wax on.
Wax off. doesn't it apply to, could we make that apply to our lives? You know, a relationship, anything of writing down some of those things and recalling some of those moments and focusing on all the good, because there seems to be a path of least resistance to bad. It's easy to think about those things. But writing down and putting why you're so much in love with your significant other, that's a good thing. The good things that your kids have done, that's positive, instead of looking at their room, perhaps, and the latest quiz score. Maybe it's maybe it's good to go and take that same principle and apply it to other parts of our lives. Just a thought.
I think it is, because if you look at sort of goal-driven people, which is sort of what runners are, we are typically hypercritical of ourselves. Because we're so goal-oriented, we seem to focus on what is not leading us to the goal as opposed to what is leading us to the goal. So that spills over into all of your life. And it you've got to become your own cheerleader. I mean, the racing is hard. And that dialogue in your head, you need to start controlling that dialogue a little bit better, because you know, that's going to make the difference in a good race or a bad race. And the better cheerleader you can be for yourself, and sometimes that's like, you know, cursing at yourself to get going. And a lot of times it doesn't matter what it is, but as long as it's sort of moving you forward, it's saying you can do this, I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. So I know that in a race, when I have something going wrong, let's say a part of my leg hurts, like my knee, I'll try to focus on what feels good. So I'm flipping that negative into a positive. And often that little tweak will just go away. Do you have other techniques? I mean, it sounds like that goes along with what you are promoting in the book as well, that other techniques people can use to sort of change things more positive. You mentioned mantras too.
Yeah, I think coming back to your mantra is really good. The breathing that you mentioned with yoga, if you can just focus on your breathing for a little bit, relaxing your breathing. If you just change something, essentially, you think about your arm swing, look around. It doesn't matter, as long as you change something to get out of that particular mindset, because our mind really likes to go down paths, and we're good at that. We will allow ourselves to sort of go down a path, and you need to make sure you can get off of that path in some way. So I think a lot of people use aid stations for that, where they can kind of switch their brain, focus on something else, arm swing, shaking your arms out, breathing, whatever it is, can be very, very helpful. But you've got to come back to you and your ability to sort of get to the finish line, and that's going to require more positive rather than negative situations.
Candace, do you have a mantra?
Usually it's just breathe.
Okay.
Yeah,
just breathe.
That focuses me. Yeah, breathe.
How about you, Dawn?
One step at a time. I guess one step at a time is probably common too.
Uh huh.
Staying in the present.
No, I don't have a mantra yet. I'm working on it. But I think pacers are very good at that, of breaking up, looking forward to a pacer that you're going to pick up in two more aid stations. So this next aid station I'm going to work, and then I'm looking forward just making it to the next aid station. Then my pacer's there.
And you can get a piggyback ride.
No muling. It all depends. Candace, do you allow muling in your races?
No way.
All right.
You know, along this same line of talk is a positive thinking. Another thing that you have on your to-do list here that I never thought of putting on there is think about how grateful you are to be running, to be able to race, and that there's not everybody can be doing what you're doing.
True.
You know, we're pretty lucky people. And to think of that, you know, I think that puts you in a pretty good mood. You know, I'm a pretty lucky guy.
I hope it does. I think that it's, you know, we can kind of get caught up in our own circumstances sometimes, but we need to remember in a lot of cases, a lot of people don't get to do what we're able to do. And even we haven't been able to do what we're able to do at times. We've all missed a big race because of an injury or something like that. So it's kind of twofold, really. It does help kind of bring you back to center and just it allows you to calm down a little bit. It's sort of like, okay, bring it down. This is good. This is fun. And to be honest, nobody's making you race. You signed up for the race yourself. It's something you choose to do. So you really should look forward to that opportunity to challenge yourself because you, in fact, hit the registration button.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're down to the night before the race. And I've been very lucky, very fortunate to have some good mentors. I remember the first race and the first bunch of races, I didn't sleep the night before. You're so amped up for the race that you just don't sleep. And then again, the negative thoughts start to chatter. I have to get to sleep or else I'm going to have a bad race. I'm going to be totally buzzed in the morning because I didn't get any sleep. And I learned very, very quickly early on from good mentors that said, don't worry about the night before the race. The sleep you need to worry about is 2 nights before the race. So the 2 nights before the race, just relax and sleep, and then don't worry about the night before. What do you suggest?
Yeah, I think it's very common that you don't have to worry about that night before. It doesn't make or break your race, and most of us don't. I have never slept well the night before. And even though I set my phone to alarm, I set a call, I set the clock radio, there's no way I'm going to oversleep for the marathon. But yet I wake up every hour. Oh, did I oversleep? What time is it? Oh, okay, it's 1 o'clock. Oh, now it's 2 o'clock. Now it happens every time. So again, it's one of those things you just accept as this is the way it is. It's okay. It does not negatively affect my performance. And some people would suggest it helps your performance because you are a little bit more amped up and you're kind of ready to go. You can't use that time to be sitting there, you know, doing a negative thing, but certainly it's fine to recognize, well, I'm just not sleeping because I'm excited for the race.
You know, Greg, you mentioned in your book that, you know, people get a little stressed out or a little bit concerned, am I going to be able to wake up for my race? And you mentioned in your book, you know, that's really has never been a problem. You know, people are pretty hyped up about it, and they're not going to sleep in. I want to introduce you to my friend Don Freeman, who actually almost slept through the starting line.
Well, I like
at Angeles Crest 100.
I like to get all the sleep I can before a big race. You know,
I think he still left the car running. He had to jump out of the car so quick to get to the starting line. But I think that's important. You know, I know for me, I make sure I double alarm, put on a couple alarms. Not that I've ever needed it the night before a race, but that at least takes that stress part out of it for me.
So Scott, you've got us at pre-race, and I'd like to, and maybe I stepped out in the beginning. Did you guys talk about tapering at all?
Yes, we did. Absolutely.
Oh, heck. I really wanted to.
You'll have to listen to the podcast.
Okay.
We're still the night before. One of the things that I've always done, I think a lot of runners do this, but I think it's very important. They lay out their outfit. The reason why I know a lot of people do it is because everybody posts a picture on Facebook of their gear that's laid out the night before. I think that's really important. That way you can tell whether you have a left and a right in Gingy sock, and you know whether you have your bib, whether you have the pins that you need to put the bib on with, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's dressing the invisible man, somebody called it. I like that. So you just start from skin out, right? Do you have everything you need from skin out to everything that you're going to have as you approach the race? And then I also mentioned in the book, it's super important to think about after the race, because you know, if you have something dry and warm after the race, it just makes a big difference in your experience if you can grab that bag and do a quick change. And it's all planning ahead. It's just making sure you've got everything covered so that then you can be calm. You don't have to wake up in the middle of the night and think, oh, do I have all the gels I need? Did I mix my drink? I don't know. And that calmness, again, can help you get ready for your race.
You know, I liked what you said in the book. Think of it as skin out, because there has been, I can think of two races that I did where I forgot to lube up. And I like that. If you think skin out before you put anything on, you know, you got to lube those sensitive areas and put on some Band-Aids where you think you may have some chafage.
Yeah, because that can really ruin a race. We've all done that where it's a small thing, but man, it causes a big problem. It's the same as toenails, right? I mean, even down to your toenails, are they ready? You know, you want to make sure you're from skin out, is everything ready to go and you've got everything you need. And that's just part of good planning in my mind. Maybe it's obsessive, I don't know, but for me, it makes me feel calm. It makes me feel like, check, 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 I've got all this taken care of, and now I just need to go out and do the race, and I don't have to worry. Because you see people scrambling the day before the race, and you just think, man, that is not good. That is not a good, I would not want to be doing that right before the race. So the more you can do from the beginning, I think is good.
I think it helps calm me down to see people running around with their.
At like least I'm not them.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Candace, what in your pre-race routine, what is unique in your pre-race routine that may be different from other runners? Do you have anything unique that you do?
I usually do a lot of headstands.
Oh, okay, the night before or the morning of?
Both. I just like to get all that blood down to my head. Sorry for the barking. Wasn't me though. No, I like to do headstands or certain stretching of muscles that I know have been a little bit of an issue, but not to overdo it. But again, it comes from like my yoga background. I think doing some of those things feels calming and relaxing. And then another thing is I always tape my ankle because I know that that I'll turn it in the race, and so I just tape it up so that I won't sprain it. You know, for the ultra marathons in the trails, you've got so many opportunities to sprain it. So
do you do that the night before or the morning of?
Oh, that's the morning of. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, you mentioned an interesting one here that I had not thought of or ever practiced, and that is something to do with a bathtub in your hotel. Can you tell us about
that's
that?
That's a brilliant one. I like that one.
I won the Masters Trail Marathon Championships a few years ago. And what I did for that race, and it's the best race I ever recovered from, was I filled the bathtub with cold water before I left to go to the starting line. And I put the little do not, you know, tend to the room sign out so the housekeeping staff wouldn't drain it. And then on the way back from the race, I simply went to the ice machine and got a few buckets of ice, filled it in, put it in the bathtub, took a quick ice bath right after the marathon, maybe 10, 15 minutes, then a hot shower. And man, I felt amazing. I just felt so much better doing that. And it was very easy. It was quick. It just required a little bit of planning, but man, it made a big difference in how I felt just to get that quick ice bath in. But I didn't want to waste the time, you know, with filling the tub and all of that. So I already kind of pre-filled it, and so it was at the ready. And I drank my drinks. You know, I'd use Generation U can, so I was drinking that when I was sitting in the ice tub to their recovery drink so I could get recovered, and then took that hot shower, which always feels good after a race. And then basically I got in my pajamas and took a nap, and then I was good to go for, you know, celebrating a couple hours later.
I'm not as fast as you, Greg. I'd have to fill the bathtub and call for a late checkout. you know, you have a great pep talk in here. You are the one putting limits on yourself. And I need a pep talk about that. Would you share some coach with us about how we set limits on ourselves?
Yeah, we have the great thing about the explosion of running popularity is that if you go to any finish line, it doesn't matter if it's a 1 mile race or a 100 mile race, you will see extraordinary performances from ordinary people, right? Just people like you and I go out and do amazing things. And that happens every single weekend. So it's clear that that ability is within all of us. It's really kind of getting out of our own way to let that shine, getting out of our own way and believing that that can happen. And if you start telling yourself you can be amazing over and over and over again, you have a higher likelihood of being amazing in the race. And so I really like to tell runners that We know that there's more in you than you currently believe. You've got to get out of your way and allow that to happen. Because every runner that has a great day, they'll talk about five or six things they could have done to make an even better day. So we know there's so much potential in each of us. And right before the race, I'm just really trying to get athletes to think that way. Just to think, why not me? Why not me coming across that line and having everybody there at the finish line crying because they can realize, look at what that person has achieved. And you know how it is. If you stand at these finish lines long enough, you are going to cry. There's going to be somebody that you recognize is doing something amazing, super important to them. They've overcome something. And I don't know what it is, but you can just sense it in that person. I don't know if it's their reaction or what it is, but I love going to finish lines because, man, it is such an uplifting thing to see these example after example of extraordinary. And that's what I try to get at in the book with that pep talk is, let's get down to that. Let's focus on that. Why not me? That can be you. You can have that extraordinary performance.
I'd like to ask both of you, both race director Candace and coach McMillan, I've got to think that is the most satisfying part of your chosen professions, to work with and see. Candace, you create these finish lines. You create the start and the finish and allow for these experiences. I've got to think that's just amazingly rewarding in ways that any other profession wouldn't allow. And then, Coach, I've got to think the same thing with you as you're working with athletes. So can you talk about that, Candace? What is it like to be a race director to create the environment that produces these lifetime experiences?
Well, it makes all the hard work worth it for me. And really, I think the most incredible finish that I've ever seen was the Tahoe 200. It was our last finisher, and we didn't think he was going to make it. We knew he was on his way and that the sweeper was like right with him.
Yeah.
And we have like a minute before the end of the race. It's a 100-hour cutoff. He's been out there for 99 hours, no, 59 minutes, and he's got 1 minute. There's still like a quarter mile up this hill to come down. Hasn't appeared. Suddenly there he is coming down the hill. And he came all the way from Japan. Couldn't speak any English at all.
Wow.
So he's running down. And the sweeper's with him just covered in ribbons. Like he's got a headdress on. And it's quite a sight. And so this guy, Kochi was his name, he's dancing coming down the hill because he doesn't know. I don't think he knows. He only has a minute. And we're yelling, hurry up. So he ends up crossing that finish line and he dives and it's 4 seconds under the cutoff.
Oh, man.
And there was this huge group there and we just, we all freaked out. We couldn't believe it. People were picking him up in the air and, you know, somebody gave him a beer and he chugged it. It was amazing.
You know, we're on video and I could see Coach McMillan over there just smiling as big as the camera will capture. Just because that's such
awesome.
A great story, and that's so empowers
awesome.
You.
Yeah.
What about so you, Coach? Awesome. What are some of the benefits of coaching athletes? Seeing this.
Well,
kind of
I'm super lucky because me and the coaches that I work with, every weekend we get to celebrate in somebody's success. Mm-hmm. It is really remarkable. I should smile all the time, to be honest, because I'm really surrounded by that. Where a lot of people are. They're doing their thing, right? They're accomplishing their goal. They're getting to the finish line. They're qualifying for ball. It doesn't matter what it is. They've accomplished that. And because you know the hard work, the ups and downs that went into that, it's really, really rewarding. And I'm just really lucky that people share that with us and love to get those emails and see those results come through on Twitter and Facebook and all of that.
You know, it may not be a bad idea to have someone you know videotape you through a finish so that you could review that the night before the next race.
Yeah, you put a list of successful finishes with your arms raised and your triumphant shout, whatever it might be.
I think that would be a benefit. You know, one of the things, just to back up a little bit into the race, I saw a quote in here that you had of Tim Noakes, which we're big fans of Tim Noakes. And he says, this is just, I actually laughed when I read this. It says, your body will argue there's no justifiable reason to continue. Your only recourse is to call on your spirit, which fortunately functions independently of logic.
I thought Noakes is great. He's great. Yeah. That was a great quote. It was perfect for the book, because again, getting back to the whole thing is just get out of your own way. There is something inside of you that can help lift you to that performance you want.
You know, I want to reiterate what Coach McMillan just said.
What's
get
that?
Out of your way with that mental negative chatter. You've done the work, trust the training. Now just get out of your way. Don't let yourself sabotage that.
You've,
I like that.
You've linked in the book the story about Dick and Ricky Hoyt. And
yeah.
And that's a video that, Scott, you just got to link that as well to what
will.
Coach has here. Can you just describe that? Because we talk about emotions and we talk about people that encourage us and inspire us. I don't think there's a bigger story in sports than this story you're about to share with us.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. And it's been going on for so long. It
yeah.
would be one thing if Dick Hoyt pushed his son for one marathon or
right.
one triathlon. But he's done it year after year after year. And if you've been in person at Boston and seen them during the race and crossing the line, it's just a remarkable story. It's definitely one of those stories that and that's why I put it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Was I wanted people to watch that video, because there's no way you can't watch that video and not be inspired, not be motivated. There's no way you can't feel sorry for yourself in the race if you think back to that story. And I really respect what they've done. And who knows how many millions of people have been inspired by what they've done together. And as a father myself, what they've done together is just remarkable. I think any parent looks at that and just says, wow, what an incredible thing that a dad did for a son, and then them together they've done so much for everybody else. It's really remarkable.
Did I see that there was a sub 3-hour marathon that he ran pushing his son in that clip?
It wouldn't surprise me. They've done so much stuff so fast. It's unbelievable what Dick has been able to do, and it's just remarkable.
He doesn't look like a Kenyan runner. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him, but my goodness, he doesn't look Kenyan-like, and he's pushing his son, and he's running much faster than I'll ever run.
And actually, I think it's a fact. He says that he has tried to run marathons or triathlons without his son,
uh-huh.
and his fastest times are with his son.
Wow. That's so empowering.
Swimming, I don't know how far you swim in a marathon, a mile?
You don't swim in a marathon, Scott.
I mean a triathlon. That's my problem. Smart Alec.
Hey, what are your friends for?
Yeah. Hey, anyway, you know, one of the other things that I thought was very, very valuable, or could be very valuable to some runners, is for this to be a handbook for them during that that freak out time frame. There, at the very end, there's a frequently asked questions of Coach McMillan.
Yeah.
Where it goes through and, you know, am I tapering too much? And there's an answer. You know, what should I be eating before the race? There's an answer. I really like this. I think you can go through. It's kind of like the troubleshooting guide when you buy a microwave or whatever.
And it keeps you busy. You know, instead of thinking negative thoughts, you're looking at solutions and answers that are proven and accurate. Not only Coach McMillan's experience, but all the people that he's coached. I've got to think that many of these questions have come and been answered and rehearsed and tested time and time again before he wrote them down.
For sure. That, I mean, it really just came from the common questions that I get over and over and over again, and providing the answer that I typically provide for that person to try to help them, you know, survive the freak out.
You've asked in the book for email addresses to people that have purchased it, because you've said you update as updates come along. You want to share that with them. And if that isn't the spirit of the runner, I don't know what is. You know, you're not saying wait for my second edition, you runners out there, and buy that one. You're saying, hey, things are going to change and evolve. I'm going to have new questions and thoughts, and give me your email address. Let's keep you updated on this. I just love that spirit.
Yeah, I really went into it as it should be a dialogue. It should be an evolving thing as we learn and experience. And so there's been two updates to it already where I've added new content, and I'll continue to do that as there's pertinent information to put in there. And it's the fun of an electronic book is that you can just update it, and all of a sudden there's the book, you know, expanded or changed, or, you know, whatever needs to happen to provide something better to the reader.
We really respect your time, and I know we're getting close to a close, but in your new edition that you've put out, you I want to talk about mental trickery and this very important statement that you made in there in the marathon distance: disassociate yourself with the first 10 miles. So can you expand on that? Because I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, the biggest problem people have in the marathon, well, there's two big problems. One big problem is not trusting your race pace, and you get caught up in what's going on, and then suddenly you're running too fast. And so that usually becomes because you're too engaged in the race at the start. You're too much involved in what's everybody doing in the pack and all of that. And you really need to kind of take a step back, run your race. And you shouldn't even have to be thinking very much in the first part of a marathon. Those miles should just roll by. And that's part of that idea, is you disassociate. So you don't really need to be super engaged in the race at that point. You should just make sure you're hitting your splits as you plan to do it. Let those miles roll by, and don't get caught up into trying to bank time or get competitive with people at that point in the race. There's a lot more racing ahead.
As a coach, Greg, as a coach, do you recommend or do you care whether people use music when they're running a race?
It doesn't matter to me. Whatever helps them
accomplish
their goals. So it seems to be personal preference.
We advocate listening to podcasts.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you lobbed that up for me, and I totally whiffed it. I'm sorry.
No.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
We'll edit it out.
Yeah, we'll edit it. I think we caught some words that you said earlier that we can place in there. Candace, what about you as race director? You know, I always look at the race rules and check for muling, and then I check for music. What's the pros and cons? What do race directors, what are they thinking when they say no music or music?
Well, I like to allow music personally because I like listening to it myself when I'm running. Or, you know, I use it sometimes. Like the shorter races, I think it's better for me not to, because I'm so focused on going fast. But in terms of rules, I think there's some safety concerns on some courses where people can't be listening to music because maybe you're sharing with a lot of mountain bikers or there's animals out there that you need to be aware of. So there's definitely reasons why race directors say no music. And then people should always take out their earbuds when they come into aid stations. People forget all the time. They'll be talking to you and listening to music. So that's the main thing. And I guess I haven't had a course where it was dangerous to listen to music. But I do recommend people keep just one earbud in, or the volume down, or wear earbuds that aren't so good that you could still hear outside noises. That's just a lot safer.
Yeah, especially if somebody comes up behind you. You've got to be aware of traffic behind you with earbuds in. That's just critical. I think just courtesy, common etiquette.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you don't chew with your mouth open. You know, there are things like that we should do. And running with earbuds is in that same category.
Okay. So the book that we're talking about is Surviving the Marathon Freakout, A Guide to Running Your Best Marathon. It is available on Amazon in electronic format for less than the price of four goos.
A lot of stuff, yeah. It's
cheap.
It's a great book.
It's cheap, and it's a quick read. It's something that you could,
you
read
can,
quick.
And you can use. Guaranteed. Yeah. I don't care if you've never run a marathon, 5K or 100 mile. It doesn't matter. There's something in there for everybody.
I'm forwarding a copy to Gordy Ainsley.
Yes. You know, yeah, Gordy needs, you know, I've seen him make a few mistakes, and it can be cleaned up with his book. So
usually he forgets his shirt. He needs to have that on his list.
You're right, Scott. He doesn't lay his stuff out before. Obviously, the shirt was missing.
Obviously.
Come on,
Gordy. It
doesn't
take him very long to lay his apparel out.
One pair of blue shorts.
Done.
Exactly.
Very good.
Make sure you go to mcmillanrunning.com. That's where you can find. There's how many coaches do you have working for you now, Greg?
We have 10 coaches.
Yeah, so you can go on there. It has bios. You can see, you know, who you think that you're going to mesh with the best.
Ian Torrance is there.
Yeah. Emily Harrison. There's the McMillan
pace calculator.
There's just so much information there. everybody should go there and just peruse that, and I think you'll come away a little bit better.
You'll be faster, better, all the things that you're looking for, you'll walk away with.
Yeah,
lots of kind words, which I appreciate, and I'm very, very happy that we get to work with so many trail and ultra people. I think the work that Ian and Emily and Jake and everybody's doing, it's really phenomenal, and I certainly learn a lot from them as I get to poke my head in and try to figure out the ultra thing.
So you've been working with Ian for how many years now?
Oh gosh, 5 or 6 years.
Does he freak out before a race?
Ian is really great. I mean, I feel like the reason, in my opinion, it's a biased opinion, I think he's the best ultra coach, is that he has so much experience himself.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's done everything right and everything wrong over and over and over again. And so he's able to really calm the runner and say, you know what, you need to prepare this way because this is what's going to help you. And his success across the board, from very new, you know, first time doing a 50K up to, you know, winning Western States, is just remarkable, the ability to transfer that knowledge to other people. And he's great. I'm really fortunate to be able to work with him.
You avoided the question, Greg. Does he freak out? I mean that may be his competitive edge. We don't want to give that out.
I think he freaks out just the same as everybody, you know. Yeah. But I think, like Candace alluded to, you learn your coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
You learn sort of where your touch points are, and I know that he, like everybody that's trying to do an event like ultras, he has really bad races. And so he really has to call upon, you know, the stuff that he's learned to try to stick in there. And that's the one thing I respect most about Ian Torrence, is he just gets it done. Still, he's still getting it done. And there's something about his makeup that allows him to just keep going when most of the rest of us wouldn't. And I think that's what he really offers to a lot of runners, is trying to communicate that.
He keeps it in perspective. He keeps it fun and brings running where it should be. It should add to your life and not consume it.
Yeah, that's great.
So go to trailrunnernation.com. Don't forget to do that. Hopefully by the time this is posted, we will be very, very close to launching our new website.
And Candace, where are we going to find you?
Wildthefind.com.
I knew it was wild.
And I just Google. I just Google Candace Pert and it pops up.
Very good. Race director for many races. How many races, Candace, you have?
There's nine.
Nine races. Maybe 10 by the time the day ends.
We have the second annual Tahoe 200 coming up, and the inaugural Bigfoot 200 coming up soon. When is the Bigfoot 200?
August 7th through the 11th. And there's still space on both races if people are interested in registering. Greg, I'm shooting that one toward you.
The gauntlet has been...
There's still time to peak for that race, Greg.
That's right. Yeah.
Candace, you know what? We might be missing something here. You have a lot of races, and if we added up cumulative all the miles that you direct, you may be the number one distance director in the world.
I might.
So we're going to have to check that out. You may not even know you were that. You're going to go to bed tonight, put your head on the pillow, and realize that you own that
title. We'll submit that to Guinness.
Very good.
It's a lot of miles to course mark.
Yeah.
Now
that's how she gets her training in, Dawn. She marks the courses.
Now slow and easy.
Now go out and coach and race direct.
Moss.